Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and thank you very much for watching because we appreciate your viewership here on the Eastman Financial Report as well as the WVW-TV. As you know, WVW-TV is a strong participant in the great marketplace of ideas, and our programming brings forth interesting comments and ideas and challenges that fit very well into today's raging debates on many social issues, financial, political, social. It's all there, and you can see some really great programming here on WVW-TV 24 hours a day. You can watch us live during the day, and of course at night you can catch the reruns. So if you're up like me at 2:30 in the morning wondering what to do, you can tune into the Eastman Financial Report reruns and see what you missed. Anyway, all of that happens because WVW-TV is committed to its ministry and its mission, and we are on the air bringing you great information. Now, that doesn't happen in a vacuum, of course. There's a costs involved, and that's why we appreciate all of you, not only as viewers but sponsors, who will go to the WVW-TV Foundation and make a donation to keep this programming robust, lively, and vibrant. You can do that at WVW-TV Foundation, and just Google it. You can go there and make a donation, and we would appreciate your sponsorship, but more importantly, we appreciate your viewership, because it's the ability to get these ideas into the public consciousness that matters, and you watch and you tell your friends and they tell their friends, and everybody's tuning in and they're seeing alternatives to the normal flow of information. We'd like to thank our sponsors as well, and of course, as you know, if you are a frequent viewer of Eastman Financial Report, that the sponsor of this program is Swiss America Trading, and of course that is a fine American company based in Arizona that sells precious metals. So if you're looking at the financial situation or the economy in general, and you're trying to figure out what to do to try and diversify your holdings to protect against inflation and other unexpected black swan events, you will want to reach out to Swiss America at 1-800-519-6271 and tell them Dan Eastman sent you from the Eastman Financial Report, and they'll be happy to send you some free information about the precious metals market and how you can participate in that space. You can also go to their website at swissamerica.com, and if you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, you will be able to see the bargains they have, and you'll also be able to shop around and see what they have to offer. Now, primarily, people at the retail side, if you're thinking about buying and owning and holding precious metals, it's important to think that through and understand that market, because there are different ways to own gold and silver and platinum and things of that nature. And of course, one way, a good way, is to actually have physical custody of the actual metal and in your own possession, and you can hide it in your sock drawer or wherever you hide your valuables. But at the end of the day, you own it, you have it, you control it. And the question is, well, how do I get some of this precious metal? Well, that's why you want to call Swiss America at 1-800-519-6271. Ask them how this all works. Go to their website, look around. Go to their website and then give them a call and say, hey, I was watching the Eastman Financial Report and I want to know more about this this idea of owning and holding precious metals. So if you're looking for gold or silver or platinum, give them a call, 1-800-519-6271, or go to their website, SwissAmerica.com, and see what they have to offer. And, you know, we are in turbulent economic times, and we are in a very turbulent political year. I mean, nobody, unless you've just stepped off a spaceship from Mars, you will know that this is going to be a wild ride. I guess what my friends in Stephenville, Texas would say, it's the hard eight, and all you got to do is hang on. So watch out. And that's why you want to be thinking about where you are financially. You know, it's January. This is a good time to take, a personal audit and a balance sheet audit and sit down and list everything you own and list everything you owe. And hopefully there's a positive number when you subtract the owing from the owning. And if that number is positive, that's your net worth or your wealth. And you may want to be thinking about, A, how to preserve that, and B, how to grow it. So there are lots of options out there. And certainly if you're thinking about precious metals, you give old Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271. They'll be glad to help you out. They're a trusted company. They've been a great sponsor of this network for years. So if you're looking for a trusted partner and you don't want to buy gold from just some big box retailer somewhere, you can give them a call, because these guys are professionals and they will tell you what you need to know. So anyway, give them a call, 1-800-519-6271. Okay, let's move into the news. And there's a bit of news today. It's kind of interesting. One story that caught my eye quickly is that charge card usage surged in December. And of course, that's no surprise, because if we've been looking at our economic situation for the past year, we realize that in September, October, student loans kicked in with a rather robust effect on the consumer. We also learned that, you know, 40% of the people who have these student loans weren't able to write that first check. They're still struggling with, how do I pay, you know, another 600, 800 bucks a month, whatever the number is. And that's a real burden on a lot of households. So what we saw was people just weren't starting to pay their student loans back, which is troubling. You know, that's a real problem. But also, they were changing their spending habits. But interestingly, when we look at the December consumer spending, the big holiday season spending, and we talked about this, will people cut back or will people continue to celebrate by going further into debt? And that's what they did. The credit card debt is the second highest on record as a result of our blowout holiday season, year-end season. And I suspect people had a great time, but now the debt hangover begins. And that's why it's an interesting news story, because we're going into an election cycle, that an election year that is telling us that effectively we have 40% of people that are still stuck in student debt. They're struggling to make the payments. Their credit card debt is up. And the job market, if we look at, I remember Thursday is our job, unemployment Thursday, we start looking at the jobs numbers, and we're seeing a stable employment situation in the U.S. We're not seeing a robust blowout market where jobs are aplenty. So it's really putting the consumer into a squeeze. And of course, at least in our state, this is happy property tax season, where just before Christmas, you get your property tax bill and kind of puts a chill on the old holidays. Well, those bills are due January 31st, I think. So basically, we're entering into the economic hangover season, and I think that's going to be very interesting as it collides with the political season, and it's going to put people in a very interesting mood. So anyway, I wanted to point that out. There's another story, of course. Yesterday, I talked about how the United States House of Representatives, which is the branch of government, we have a bicameral legislature, of course. I mean, bicameral means two houses. We have the House of Representatives, which is the people's house, where we elect our representatives every 2 years. There's no hanging over. Every 2 years, all 436 of these people are reelected by the people, and they control the purse strings of the American federal government. Okay. Anytime the federal government spends money, the theory is that the House of Representatives would introduce these spending bills. And of course, the wise old senators up in the United States Senate, who used to be effectively appointed by the states to protect the state's interest, but then they changed the Constitution and made it a super house where the people elect the senators just like they elect their representatives, but they elect them a 6-year term. So these people tend to stick around a while. And once you get one elected, they're pretty hard to get rid of. But the point is, then the Senate would approve the spending bill, send it on to the president. The president would sign the bill. And then, of course, the president's job is to basically administer the spending through one of our fine federal agencies, which are headed up by fine cabinet secretaries, all appointed by the president. So what we watched last year, and I talked about this ad nauseum yesterday, but I'll refresh your recollection today, is that for three times last year, the federal government was screeching to a halt because they had run out of money and they had to pass continuing resolutions from the assembly to the Senate, signed by the president, and that keeps the government going. They're basically, a continuing resolution says, keep spending what you spent last year, and we authorize you to spend the same amount of money on the same stuff, and just keep going. We haven't passed the budget. The president hasn't signed the budget in the law, so we'll pass these continuing resolutions to just keep going and just keep going, okay? Just keep spending. And that happened three times in 2023. And now, of course, we talked about this just around Thanksgiving, how they came, you know, there were threats of shutting down the government, and poor old Janet Yellen couldn't sell debt and it was going to be bad. And of course, they came to a last minute 11th hour compromise and punted to January. And of course, I commented about that. Well, they kicked the can past the holidays because these holidays are going to be a little rough and people don't want to be hearing about their government going broke when they're racking up debt of their own on their credit cards and can't pay the student loans. Well, that day of reckoning has come. And of course, last weekend, and again, I talked about this yesterday, there was a bipartisan agreement in the House as well as the Senate. And I'm sure the White House would certainly not be vetoing something like this at this late hour. So there's cooperation amongst the two branches of government, and they agreed to a $1.66 trillion continuing resolution. There's four of them, actually, to kick the can down the road. Now, the question is, the farther you kick the can down the road in an election year, the closer you get to the primary season. And that may not matter given the way our primary federal presidential primary is shaking out. It looks like one party has only one candidate, tried and true, and the other party has lots and lots of people, all of whom are vying to get themselves into the Oval Office. So it's going to be somewhat of a lopsided primary season because we already know who's going to win one, and now we're going to wait to see who's victorious in the other. So the ability, that opens up a window to kick the can a little bit farther in because nobody's, half the country's not paying attention because their primary is irrelevant. So that's why it's sort of interesting what's happening. But notwithstanding this bipartisan agreement on a $1.66 trillion can kicking, of course, we now see in the news today that there are some rumblings from the conservative Republicans within the House that they're not going to stand for this $1.66 trillion for continuing resolutions can kicking. They are going to want to see some spending cuts or some discipline and this and that. And you say, why at this late hour when we all know that they kick the can? They always sign the resolutions at the last minute because there's no possible way to turn off the federal government. You've got a lot of these federal dollars are allocated to Medicare, Medicaid, entitlement programs that are basically required to be funded, and defense, of course, we're spending money all over the globe on defense. So it's really difficult to turn the spigot off. So why are they going through this kabuki? What's going on? Well, the answer, of course, and again, this is not a political show. This is a financial show. But let's face reality that politics impacts the national economy every 4 years, some lesser extent every 2 years with the off-season election. But at the end of the day, what's going on is you're seeing the conservative faction rattling the saber and pounding the desktop and saying, we must be more fiscally prudent. And of course, it's kabuki. They want the folks back home to see that they're about to shut down the whole government unless I get my way. We're the only people that are prudent. And then what'll happen is they'll all cave in and it'll be signed and we will kick the can down the road. So this is what's going on. So I thought it was kind of funny to see this headline that, that the conservatives are gonna hold the line this time. They punted the last three times, but here we are. Here we are. So anyway, we'll watch that sideshow. I would not, if you're very much into, Armageddon thinking. I keep the tinfoil hat on the shelf because I'm not seeing these guys shutting down the government, especially as we go into an election year. But I could be wrong. Who knows? We'll see. So anyway, let's move on from that. There's a couple of other stories that I thought were very interesting. And one of the things I've noticed, and this is a little more somber, I guess I'll talk about this one first, is that with respect to small family businesses in the United States, there is a continuing movement to make it very difficult for small family businesses to continue operating. And this is being done at the administrative level. And it's of some concern. And I'm sure the national lobbying groups for small business interests are I'm sure paying attention to this, one would hope. And then at the end of the day, what we're seeing are two things I want to talk about. Number one is a change in the when you are self-employed, you have to report your income quarterly to the IRS. And when you do that, it's not only your estimated income tax, but it's also your percentage of the 15%, it's a round number, 15% FICA tax, which is Social Security tax. And you make quarterly payments throughout the year, and then it gets trued up in your final income tax filing on April 15th, okay? And at the end of the day, when you are selling goods and services to somebody and you sell more than $600, they're supposed to give you what's called a form 1099 or a 1099 form, which reports how much money people paid you, and they report that to the IRS, and you get a copy and you're supposed to send it in with your tax returns. And it's a way that the government can watch to see how much money is transacting in the private sector, so that people pay their taxes. So effectively, if you're in business and you have a customer and they buy more than $600 from you, and there's all sorts of exceptions, they're supposed to send you a 1099 at $600. And of course, you're supposed to report the income. And I think, you know, the IRS must have a stack for each taxpayer, and they add them all up, and your tax return ought to add up to that number, and then you pay your taxes. Real simple. But at the end of the day, that has always been somewhat of a burden. And with an inflationary environment, $600 is starting to be small change. And at the end of the day, it is becoming more and more of a burden, not only for the small business to go to their customers and say, give me the 1099, but also to write out a 1099 just because, you know, somebody charges you $600 to empty the trash cans, it's a 1099. So that is becoming a burdensome thing. And the question is whether small business lobbying interests are paying attention to that and raising those interests in Congress or not. I have no idea, but it's becoming, you're starting to see stories about how these small businesses are being burdened. Well, the addition to that base story, of course, is the fact that more and more of the young entrepreneurial class, the Gen Zs and Xs and all the alphabet generations, are effectively doing more and more business on electronic pay platforms such as Venmo or PayPal or some of the big names in the industry, where effectively if I provide a good or a service or I sell you something, then the money gets transferred through this electronic platform. And the IRS, of course, has said, well, this is great because you can track all of these transactions, and anything over $600 has to be reported. Now, this has been controversial, and at the moment, I believe it's a $5,000, because what's happening is somebody will give somebody a wedding gift or a birthday gift or some, you know, I'll pay you, you know, you sold me a lawnmower or whatever, and it's over $600. That's not income. If you're selling property that you own and there's no capital gain on it, you're just merely converting your lawnmower into $600. That's all you're doing. It's not a taxable event, at least according to the tax laws. So what's happening is they're trying to tweak this system and method so that these transactions can be tracked. And of course, the Internal Revenue Service is very, very eager to collect all of the taxes that the federal government is entitled to. There's a very famous Supreme Court decision by Justice Learned Hand back in the old days that said, you know, Americans are required to pay every last penny of income tax that they owe, and not one penny more. So you can be very careful in how you structure your affairs and your transactions so that you can minimize your taxes. And that's a legitimate practice that people, when you think about triggering an economic transaction and there's a tax implication, you hire, you know, accountants or tax lawyers, and you would structure it in such a way that you would minimize the tax, but of course you would pay every penny that you owe. You're not avoiding taxes, you're merely minimizing your tax liability, and then you pay your taxes. So what's happening is it's putting a lot of pressure on our alphabet generations, who are at heart very entrepreneurial and very creative and exceptionally talented when it comes to using technology to their advantage and benefit to operate their business platforms. It's not uncommon for many, many, many young people to sell things on certain marketing platforms and accept payments through these electronic payment systems. And of course, that the interesting news is that, you know, the government can see all of that, and they're starting to really enforce that those transactions. So it's putting some real pressure on small businesses. And ultimately, I think, you know, through technology, automation, and even perhaps, you know, AI, maybe you could get the artificial intelligence to pay your taxes for you. I don't know how that stuff works. But at the end of the day, it's putting more and more pressure and making it more difficult on small businesses to continue to thrive. And if they do, they're going to be thriving in a digital environment. So maybe it's transitional, or I don't like the word evolutionary, but maybe it's a transitional thing. And maybe the old business owners will not be transitioning and the new ones will. But it's an interesting story about how the government regulation is really burdening the economy. And when you think about it, we all know the jokes about the Internal Revenue Service, and we all, the blood drops from our face when you get the letters from the Internal Revenue Service. But at the end of the day, their job is to collect the taxes owed to the federal government. And the taxes were established by we the people through our Congress, signed into law by the person we elect as president. So that's the deal. I mean, we have a tax system, and they tax what they're entitled to tax, and you're supposed to pay what you're required to pay. And that's how we fund our government. But when you look at the more macroeconomic picture about, look at the tax receipts and look at the deficit. Now, right now we're kicking $1.66 trillion. That can is being kicked down the road a few more months. And of course, we know last year there was a $2 trillion deficit, spending deficit, which means they collected $2 trillion fewer dollars than they spent. And so they had to borrow the rest of it. So you can see the pressure on the American taxpayer by the federal government to squeeze every last tax dollar out, and squeeze as they may, they will never squeeze $2 trillion or $1.66 trillion out of the tax base. I mean, half of the American populace doesn't even pay federal income taxes because their incomes are so low or they're underage. And the other half, you look at the middle class, and then you look at the wealthy, well, a lot of wealth is global, and then that's structure. I'm talking about how people structure their affairs so that they can minimize their taxes. Well, at the big level, the billionaire level, I mean, you're a global player, and it is completely legal and possible to structure your affairs in such a way that a lot of your income is offshore and never comes, into the grasp of the American tax collector. And of course, Americans are taxed globally. So if you think you're going to move to Italy or Bolivia or somewhere and live tax-free happily ever after, you're not. You have to pay taxes no matter where you live on the globe, and we're one of the few countries that does that. But we're the biggest biggest debtor country on earth, so we've got to squeeze those taxes. So at the end of the day, it really leaves the tax burden to the middle class. I mean, that's basically what's going on. And I don't know how, I have my three silos. We have the poor, the middle class, and the wealthy, and there's always a question, the overflow from each one. But at the end of the day, it's the American working people that are stuck with $34 trillion in debt. They're watching, there's $1.66 trillion debt can being kicked down the road. And, we know that the United States Treasury is eager to collect all the taxes they're entitled to, which we entitled them to entitle themselves to. So at the end of the day, it's an interesting problem. And that's why you want to be thinking from your own personal perspective. This is not a time to go, prancing and naively through the meadows and not paying attention to what's going on, because our economy is stretched like it's never been stretched before, with $34 trillion in debt and $1 trillion in debt service, which is coming out of theoretically the tax base, which means that $1 trillion doesn't get spent on bridges and roads and brand new tanks and bombers. It goes to pay interest on stuff we bought last year and 10 years ago and 20 years ago. So it's kind of an interesting problem to deal with. I do want to talk about another story. I mean, nothing but cheerful gloom and doom today, but these are the stories, and this is the world we live in. I saw an interesting story about commercial real estate, and I think I'd like to double back and start talking about the commercial real estate markets for a little bit, because it is a significant issue that has a lot to do with urban and urbanization and urban environment and downtowns. And the story is that the commercial real estate world, which is effectively office buildings, we're going to talk about office buildings. Commercial real estate is also apartment buildings, and it's all sorts of commercial, retail space and office buildings and all sorts of venues where they're in the free market, and they generate revenue and they pay their bills and they hopefully have something left. But the story is that there's on average a 20% vacancy rate in commercial office real estate. And at first I thought, well, that's not such a big deal. But when you think about it, buildings are not homogeneous. They tend to be very specific in nature. Commercial real estate buildings can be single use for a single tenant, or they can be multi-tenant, big, tall office buildings. Well, it could be the headquarters of some big company, or they could have 50 different businesses in their building as tenants. And of course, as I look around, at least in our Midwestern markets, the buildings that are in the downtown areas, the urban areas, were very popular 20 years ago, 10 years ago, because it seemed like the young population was migrating from their sterile suburban homes into the excitement and drama and just basically sophistication of the downtown environment. So you're seeing all the young people piling into downtown, and it's really cool because you live in a building and you can walk to your favorite coffee shop and restaurants, and it was just exciting because whenever you're out on the street, there's traffic and noise and all sorts of dramatic things to see and people to see, and that basically came to a screeching halt after COVID, as people were hunkered down into their homes. Of course, the ones who were hunkered down into their homes in the towers downtown, in your 500 square foot or 800 square foot apartment, suddenly began to realize that that was somewhat of a stifling and confining existence. And these markets are changing. And one of the things that people have learned, and this is a fundamental shift in American culture, is that the average person working in a building downtown is no longer interested in doing that. And with technology, just like today, I'm talking to you on a computer and you can see me, and I could have a Zoom panel with, 15 people. We're all talking to each other at once. We don't need to be in a downtown office building with offices and cubicles and conference rooms and water coolers and snack rooms. We don't need that. And with $3 gas or whatever, it's cheap right now. I mean, gas is coming down. Welcome to an election year, America. It's going to be cheap driving this year. But anyway, people are spending that. They don't want to be stuck in a car for an hour commuting downtown, or they don't want to be, confined. So at the end of the day, nobody's going back, or people are really resisting the idea of going back into the office full time. And you're seeing a lot of packages negotiated. Well, you have to be here 2 days a week, or 3 days a week, and the other days you can work from home. But people are not doing that because technology makes it very, very easy for more and more sectors of our economy in the service sectors to basically work wherever they are. You can be at home, or you can be on a beach somewhere in a lawn chair. I've got a buddy of mine who's a doctor, and he's down enjoying Florida this week. And I don't know if his boss knows that, but he's working from a lawn chair poolside. And that's my point, that effectively the culture has changed. So if you are the owner of these commercial buildings, you got a real problem on your hands, because you've got a building and on average they're 20% vacant, but buildings aren't structured like that. If you drive around and you look at Class C or Class B or even the prestigious Class A space, in the C and B buildings, they're much more than 20% vacant. And those spaces are very, very hard to fill because nobody wants to go to an old building, park a car, go up into the building and work. So at the end of the day, you are thinking as a commercial real estate owner that you may have a huge problem on your hands. And as I've mentioned before, commercial real estate loans are short-term loans. They can be most likely a five-year note that's renewable or refinanceable, or perhaps you got lucky and you got a 10-year note or a seven-year note. But at the end of the day, they're not a 30-year fixed mortgage. You are going to have to deal with the fact that you have to refinance these properties at a time when your vacancy rate may be 50%, 40%, 60%, and nobody's coming to your building because nobody wants to work in a building. You can't rent it, but yet you must refinance it, because if you don't roll it, then it goes into foreclosure. And of course, if you're the local bank holding this note, you're just as worried as that building owner, because as a banker, the last thing you want is a default, because we saw what happened when I started my show back in February and March. We had three banks that went belly up effectively because, it was a lot of things. It was the diminution of value of their reserves. But at the same time, if you've got non-performing loans, that hurts your reserves just as well. And it's putting very strong pressure on the smaller regional and local commercial banks and the landlords. And that's why we have to look at this commercial real estate situation in 2024, because the culture has changed. The demand for big office space full of lots of people after COVID. First of all, people don't want the inconvenience. And second of all, I don't want to be working in an office with 100 people because I don't want to get sick all the time. That's a real problem. So we're going to watch that commercial real estate story closely as well. Well, I'm out of time for today. It's so much, it's always fun to talk and for me and for you to listen. And I appreciate you listening. I appreciate you tuning in. Give WVW TV Foundation, look them up, and if you can help out, we'd really appreciate it, and consider our sponsors as well. Thanks so much, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.